So the other day out on the trail, I saw this dude, he's riding one of those sit down bikes, and it looked as though he had stolen it out of the garage of the woman that he banged the night before. And he didn't really know what to do with it other than just get away, you know, just get away from that property. That was his only objective. Tea in the Sahara with you. Tea in the Sahara with you. It's one of the underplayed police songs, Tea in the Sahara. Of course, by tea, they probably mean eating a meal. You know, the British, they'll say, let's have tea, but there's tea, but it's also food. Like, it's dinner. Like, they call it tea dinner. Or they call it dinner tea. Is it tea time? Have a cup of tea? Would you like some teas, tits? Nah, I'm having tea. Tea in the Sahara. Tea in the Sahara? Up on some sand dune? Is that what's going on? Yeah, I was watching, yesterday morning, I convinced my lady to come out with me on a little hike. And it's always cool. Like, the weather's been amazing, like, knock on wood, but it's always nice to kind of accidentally come across something when you completely are unexpected. It's completely unexpected. But we made it out. We went down alongside the creek, and came back up through town. And there was some, like, a kind of a fair, crafts fair thing, kind of a mark. I don't know what you want to call it, like an outdoor thing with food trucks and folk art, and, you know, my lady got a dream catcher. And, yeah. And, you know, so she can catch her dreams. And then, it just was serendipitous. Like, it was like tea in the Sahara, right? It was like just walking across a mirage, right? Like, it's warm. It's warm out in the morning. It's not hot. It's not hot. A little breeze, you know, there's a fight, you know, 4 or 5 mile walk, and then you happen upon this again. It's like an oasis. It just appeared out of nowhere, like this, all these like really good food trucks. So we had, there's like a lobster sandwich. I mean, it was like, I don't know, was it a dream? Did I dream all this? What the fuck? Like, but so things have been going really, really well, really well. I got to catch a lot of a good portion of the USA Track and Field Championships Saturday. I was watching the semis in the women's 400 hurdles, and then I watched the women's 400 meter final, and what's her name? Sydney McLaughlin Lavroni. Dude, what, she went 48, she ran like 48.78 or something. It was just like, she just missed the American record. Of course, she's the newest, she's kind of like the latest kind of prodigy to be taken under the wing of Bob Kersey, who was Jackie Joyner Kersey's husband and coach. And then he also coached like everybody else, like Florence Griffith Joyner, which I think she did steroids, but I mean, if you run 10.49, you know, 50 years ago, like, and then you suddenly die of a heart attack, like, it's been a really good meet so far. Sha'Carri Richardson won the 100 meters, and then she just spouted off like a sewer rat. It's like, just be humble, You know, it's easy. It's okay to be humble. I love how she tore her wig off. She took the wig off right before the race, which, and I'm not even, that's not even a joke. Like, I think that's really cool. Like, I don't know. That would be like, I don't know. It seems like something like the founding fathers would do before they signed the Declaration of Independence. They'll just rip their wig off and then just went hard, right? But, what else? Oh, the men's steeple. Oh, the men's steeplechase. Kenneth Rooks. What the fuck, dude? So, really good field. You got Duncan Hamilton, who's run 8:16. You got Rooks, who won the NCAA championships, and he's run 8:17, which at the currently is the third fastest collegiate time of all in history. And but he went down. He hit a barrier on the backstretch. It looked like about two or three laps in. He did negotiate the hurdle properly and just kind of clipped it and went over and then down and got stepped over by four or five guys, and they put a good 60 yards on him before he got up. And he fucking won. He came back and he just started picking people. He pulled it. And even, I give him a shout out at the post-race interview. He's like, I decided to pull Henry Marsh. I'm like, fuck yeah, you did. Little throwback shout out there to old Henry Marsh, former American record holder. So he won an 8:16, which is now, let's see, is that, it's right there. It's right there. Second all time collegiately, but what else? Oh, the 10,000 meters was Thursday. That was won by Woody Kincaid. This guy's got some wheels, man. Fucking just lays it down on the last lap. Outkicked Joe Klecker and Brian McGordy. So that's our team. What's his name? Grant Fisher got fourth. I think they've got a, it seems like maybe one of them still has to make a, there's qualifying times, the Worlds, and I don't know if they've all qualified under the standard for the World Championship standard, but nevertheless, fucking good race. So today is the I'm speaking to you from back in time. Gotta get back in time. I'm speaking to you from the past, from Sunday, yesterday. And so they're gonna wrap it up today. They've got the men's 200 final. That's gonna be a good one. Noah Lyles and Arian Knighton gonna be? I think he's gonna be in it. They got the men's 800 finals today. This guy, what's his name? Sumner from Georgia. He's the guy. I think he's the favorite. Will Sumner, who won the NCAA championships with a 144. I didn't realize he was a freshman. 144, bust out a 144 at the NCAA championships. So I think he's the guy to beat, and he's just a front. He's 19 years old. Like, what the fuck? So they got that. They got the 800. They got the men's and women's 400 meter hurdle finals. They've got the men's 5,000 meter final coming up. And the 1500 was good. Oh, that was really good. What's his name? Fucking beep boop boop. Cole Hawker was in position to steal it, but he's got that devastating kick. But second place was who was the? He ran 3:30. The winner was 3:34, and it was. Shit, man. totally drawn a blank, but Centrowitz was off the back. He was never in it. Cooper Tier didn't make the final. And who was that? Who won? My goodness. Let's see. Saturday. Men's 1500 final. Oh, yeah, that's right. Duh. Yared Nuguse. Who kind of led most of the way. And then Joe Wascom was coming up on him on the final corner, on the final turn. Good for Joe Wascom, too. So it was basically a three-man race coming down the stretch. Cole Hawker couldn't find that last gear. And the Goosey held off Wascom, and that was a wrap, 334. So today is going to be good, man. It's going to be good. So, women's steeplechase was pretty cool, too. Emma Coburn should have run away with it. She got this, but this little girl, my lady and I are watching, this little tiny girl, Chrissy Gear, came out of nowhere from Hoka. Going into the bell lap, she grabbed second behind Emma Coburn, who was just trying to, like, just undo everybody with a blistering, like, last 600 meters. Just go hard with a lap and a half to go. But this little tiny Chrissy Gear, like, no pun intended, she found that extra gear. I'm like, I could tell, too, looking the back of her head coming around the final, on the bell lap, you know, going into the first turn on the final lap. I could sense the back of her head. Like, I could see she wants it. And, yep, and she got it, man. She blew past Emma Coburn, and there was no response. I love that shit. So then, even the women's 1500 was really good. Ething Mu, the 800 meter runner, moved up from the 800 to the 15. You know, everybody says Bob Christie is a genius, and he's very good. He's very successful. But if you can run a good 800 meter, or a great 800 meter, like, you should be able to run a very good 1500 meter. Like, it's not a big stretch, but this little lesbian comes out of nowhere, Nikki Hiltz, and just fucking, she wasn't gonna go down like that. And she passed Moo coming around the final turn, and that was a wrap. And then little Corey McGee was right behind her. I think she's from the Midwest. And Sinclair Johnson, the returning, she won last year. She dove to hang on and try and grab third, and she missed it by 0.01 of a second after diving. Little tiny Sinclair didn't. They all ran 4:03, but she was 0.01 of a second off. And that was a wrap, girls. Everybody go home. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here, okay? So today's the day. Today's the day we're going to see a lot of stuff. I've got the women's long jump final. They're running the men's 200-meter semifinals on the same day as a final, man. That's pretty brutal. Same with the 110 highs. Who's in the women's 800? Ething Mu, she's not even running the 800-meter final. I mean, that's pretty much her event. Like, it's hers to lose, and she's not even in it. But anyway, getting exciting. It's getting exciting. So here I am speaking from back in the past, but let's go back to the future. You know what I'm saying? Specifically, and in terms of the movie itself, I'm just going straight up pop culture on you. This is straight up pop culture, right? So I was watching, I don't know why, I just kind of like Back to the Future was available to stream, like, fucking, you know what? Why the fuck not? There's not much I can say bad about that movie, right? First time I saw it, it was like, it checks every box in your dopamine, right? Flashy car, witty dialogue, clever dialogue, action-packed, good music, Huey Lewis cameo. I mean, Jesus. If Huey Lewis is in your movie, it's a good movie. Back to the Future, Shortcuts, right? It's Huey Lewis, man. So I turned that on, and you just can't go wrong, right? Like, in our little neighborhood, in our funky little kind of Brooklyn street neighborhood with residential streets, it's got one of those stretches. There's a couple of stretches along the surface streets and the side roads where they've got those trees that kind of the branches drape over the street itself and almost connect to the tree on the other side of the street. And every time I see stuff like that on my little hikes and shit, I picture George McFly just like laying on top of one of those thick branches, like with his binoculars peeping into like the upstairs bedroom of Leah Thompson, or, you know, like, he's like, it's funny. The funny thing about that movie is, like, perception isn't, what you find out is perception is not reality, first of all, in a lot of cases, right? Like, what he discovered, what Marty McFly, Michael J. Fox's character, discovered was his parents were kind of slutty and perverted. Right? But it's funny. Like, I was tripping out because even though that was 85, it was 38 years ago. 30 fucking 8 years ago. And I was just like, what the f-? Like, Michael J. Fox was huge in the 80s. Like, he was in everything. Like, he was in, you know, first he did Teen Wolf. Then he did Back to the Future. He was already in Family Ties. And, like, Family Ties was huge. And then he was in some other, like, sitcom, Spin City or something, where he kind of riffed off his conservative, like, political character. And then he did all those other movies, like Doc Hollywood, Bright Lights, Big City. That was based on the Bret Easton Ellis book, I think. Kind of a little serious endeavor, a little drama, a little dramatic acting. He did Secret of My Success, where he posed as yet another conservative person in a suit. I think secretly he's like conservatively, I don't know. Honestly, I heard he was kind of like before. It seems like he's had Parkinson's forever, and that's tragic, and it sucks, you know. But it literally seems like he's had Parkinson's for like 30 years, right? But I heard he was kind of a dick. I did really hear that, but. But now, you know, when you get Parkinson's, you got to be a little more cool, you know? You got to be cooler. What else was he in? God, he was in... I mean, he was... It just seems like he was in everything, right? All the sequels, Back to the Future sequels. But that movie was so tight, right? And there was so many, like, clever little... What do they call it? Like, they call it Chekhov's Razor, where... Is it Chekhov's razor? Where it's kind of a foreshadowing device. Like, you'll see it again in the... Somewhere later in the story, somewhere later in the movie. But, like, his reference to, like... like, his jailbird Uncle Joey. And how he didn't make parole again. And then when he goes back in time... Joey's like in the crib, and then he's like, you better get used to these bars, kid, and all that shit. But he finds out like his mom was a slut. His mom's kind of like a horny slut, you know, ugh, like and his dad was a pervert. But he goes back in time and he creates like this butterfly effect, right? So he gives his dad courage to stand up to Biff, and it totally changes the outcome of his life. It prompts him to step up and try and get his stories published, his science fiction stories, which in turn makes him successful instead of the doormat that he was in the beginning of the movie, right? There's all kinds of like little interesting little, you know, little caveats here and there, little Easter eggs. And but that, as far as like pop culture go, you know, the whole like nod to like where like Marvin Berry, the band, the high school band that's playing, it's Marvin Berry, which is I guess Chuck Berry's cousin, who injures his hand when he gets locked in the trunk of the car. So Michael J. Fox has to like take over, and he plays Johnny B. Good, and he's calling his brother, or no, his cousin. Yeah, Chuck, it's your cousin Marvin Berry. Listen to this. So I guess Michael J. Fox created Chuck Berry's sound. All right, but it's just. It's funny shit, just pop culture, just all the references to the pop culture. The DeLorean thing was classic, funny as shit. That little town, it's kind of like that town you want to live in, you know? There's like a little square, a little plaza square. You know, everything kind of happens, everything's kind of centered in that, you know? You can go get a milkshake over at the little diner in the plaza, or you can simply just run like weather experiments with a car from 1985, from 30 years in the future, on the evening of November 5th, right? Makes perfect sense. But you ever notice too, like, actually, I've pointed this out more than once to my lady, but when you go back to the mall in the beginning, when Marty meets Doc Brown down at the mall, when he first sees the DeLorean, and all the streets are wet, and you know what? All the pavement is wet. The streets, the blacktop. When they film at night, the streets, and see like just see if you can kind of if you ever have like the wherewithal, if you ever are watching a movie where they're showing the streets at night, are they wet? Why are the streets always wet? I think it has something to do with like capturing it on film. It just, there's something that precipitates them having to water down the streets of movies when they film at night, right? I don't know what it is, but every time I see, I don't know, it's one of those weird things I just happen to notice. And because it's not rain, the rain is not a factor in the beginning of Back to the Future, right? But he goes to the mall, and the whole pavement is wet. So what's going on? Why? Why do they do that? Is it the same as like the way that they got to use clouds in the background to show like a plane or a jet, if they have to show it moving on film, and if there's nothing in the background, you can't really, it doesn't look like it's moving. But if you put a backdrop of clouds, then you've got perspective, you can see that the plane is moving or the jet's moving or whatever. I think that's what it is. I think there's something to do. I think they deliberately dampen the streets at night for filming. I'll have to find another example of this, but keep your eyes peeled. See what you find, right? But I just thought that was interesting. So then, yeah. So the weekend went, yeah, everything, God, it was just a good weekend. Like, I went out for a couple of 3 hours, like, good 3 hours. Like, Saturday, I said, I'll be back in 3 hours. And it was almost exactly 3 hours. When I got done, I wasn't hurting, but I thought to myself, now times that by five. Like, what you just did, times that by five. And that's about the winning the Western States 100 miler. If you are good, you'll have had to put out five times the effort of what you just did. And three hours is a ways. I mean, it's no, you know, there's nothing to sneeze at, you know. I could feel it. So this is nice that yesterday you just go take a nice little kind of little recovery hike down by the river, down by the creek, and then come across some oasis, some kind of strange tea in the Sahara moment, where all of a sudden I was like, there's food trucks everywhere, and people, and the community, and they're selling crafts, and arts, and crafts, and burl, and funky folk art, you know, and little owls that are made from pine cones, and, you know, dream catchers. It's the best, but, yeah, it was just, everything just kind of came together. I whipped up a few, out on my hike, my Saturday hike. I whipped up I was just scrolling through, like, I don't know, podcasts that come and go, but I kind of like to have a little bit of, something fresh, something new, something different, maybe a different perspective, different angle. And I don't know who this Tim Ferriss guy is, but I guess he's pretty good. He's written he's one of those guys that he's successful, and I don't know why. But maybe he's kind of is he a motivational guy or something? But he's got good guests, right? So I've actually downloaded three of his podcasts. The first one was Stuart Copeland, the drummer for The Police. The second one was Steven Ranella, who has that show Meat Eater on Netflix, and then talking about survival skills and stuff like that, and then finally Chuck Palahniuk. And most of it, he talked with Chuck Palahniuk. I had already kind of a lot of the bullet points were covered, writing craft, style, motivation, agenda, things like that. But and then the first one, the Stuart Copeland one was pretty informative. He did, in fact, talk a lot about his family being in the CIA. I guess both his parents were, like, super smart. His mother was British, so that's how he ended up in the police. He must have had dual citizenship, because his dad was American. His dad was in the CIA. And, but he lived in some gnarly areas. Like, he lived in, Lebanon? Like, Beirut? And he had to be evacuated and shit like that. He went to the same school that Osama bin Laden went to. Like, this guy's in it. Like, he knows some shit. Like, and he's one of these nerdy guys. He's one of, like, these really super, like, too smart. Like, he's super smart. He's like, he reminds me of my ex-father-in-law, who's, like, super smart and borderline hip, but not really, but cool, but, like, a little reverent, but just a kind of a nerd, but semi-cool in a weird way. But he's one of the greatest, he's one of the best drummers of all time. And he touched on a little bit of his kind of relationship with Sting, which I think is fascinating. Like, something about, I don't know, that group, man. I mean, just, it's one of the greatest trios of all time. You know, Andy Summers could play guitar in any band ever. The Stones, the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Zeppelin, and Sting is like one of the great bassists, and vocalists too. And then Stuart Copeland is just he's almost virtually like a classically trained drummer, but but separately, like, I didn't much care for, like, any of their solo anything. Particularly, Sting had some stuff, but it was just something about that band, as the way they worked together was so, like, I don't know. They optimized every talent, every gift given to them by God, or whatever you believe, they utilized and got the most out of. But so that was that was interesting. But he talks like a nerd. Stuart Copeland does talk like a nerd, but he's one of those kind of like, he knows some shit. Like, he knows some shit because his dad being in the CIA. Like, but the other podcasts, so it was like 3 hours of podcast just between the two, between Stuart Copeland and Stephen Rennell. And the Rennell one was interesting because Tim Ferriss, I know, doesn't seem to be like, he's certainly not like a conservative type or a doomsday prepper type, but he is in the mindset of trying to understand stuff, which is interesting, which is cool, because like Rich Roll, he says, seek to understand, not to convince, right? And I think that's where this guy is coming from. But he's talking to Rennella about, basically about survival. And Rennella, of course, and he's a guy that's up to speed with technology, but he's also kind of, he also like, is a borderline prepper. So the perception is that he is about surviving in extreme situations, which he is. And he talked about how he goes to like the most remote places in the world in an effort to test himself, test his durability and so forth. But there's also the element of like, you know, he knows a lot of preppers. And the preppers are the best, you know? I love those guys. Because they're so paranoid, you know? Because the thing is, it's like, the defining characteristic for me with a prepper is the fact that they are prepared, and that's great. And I think that's the best thing that can be is to always be prepared, and no matter what situation you're in, to be prepared. There's elements of being over-prepared or wanting to be so prepared that you almost anticipate things happening because you want them to happen. And that's the dark element. That's the dark side, right? Because I think a lot of those preppers are kind of masking just the notion that they want to shoot somebody with a gun, and they're anxious for it to happen. And I'm sure, I might be wrong. I could be wrong. I probably am wrong. But, you know, I get it, man. Like, you're prepared for everything or whatever may go down, but at the same time, you don't necessarily need, you know, 5 years of freeze-dried food in your pantry or in an underground bunker, right? Because what happens if that were the case? Like, what if that really happened? Can you imagine us being in a bunker, in a hole, and all you have is freeze-dried? I mean, you know... You got a few fresh eggs. You got enough to last you a month or two. You know, you got some fresh milk. You got some purified water. It's going to last you, you know, a couple months. But then you got to hit that freeze-dried food, and it's like that shit just sets like a fucking brick in your stomach, right? What you've done is you've inserted a red brick into your colon, right? And now you're stuck in a hole underground with the dregs of humanity, the survivors, the people that have to kill to survive, just trying to get into your, like, how is that living? Is that living? I don't know. I'd want to go out like as a forager. I just go out. I'm going to forage my food. You know, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to kind of pick what I need to eat, kind of Noma style, just out on the beach, out in the forest, get some mushrooms, get a little fennel, get a little moss, you know, get some snails, a little escargot, and just start picking zombies off, right? Be out there. Be active. Get in it. You know, get your hands dirty. Enjoy. What are you going to sit in a bunker watching reruns of fucking you know, Melrose Place or something. Is that, that's no way to live, eating freeze-dried spaghetti. It's no good. It's no good, man. You know, put your Peloton down there, you know. What happens if the shit goes down, you got a Peloton and it's on, down underneath your bunker? Are they still going to debit your account each month for that Peloton? Or do you think Peloton, they get overtaken? Are they overtaken by the zombies? Is that what we're led to believe? It could be. I don't know. The shit goes down. But he had in the interview with Tim Ferriss's interview with Stephen Ranella, he had a bug out knife. He had bug out knives and bug out kits and kits within the bug out kits and then a kit within the bug out kit that's within the bug out kit. It's like, okay, at what point now? At what point is there, you know, we kind of skirting the line of paranoia, right? It's good to be prepared. I like to be, I enjoy being prepared, but that dude gets to a point where he's like, I want to shoot somebody. Train my kids to shoot somebody. Like that's, I don't know. On a surface level, how would you explain your life? How would you justify your existence in relation to what people see versus what's really going on, right? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe if it's a devastating enough apocalyptic kind of event, kind of a cataclysmic event, kind of a extinction event? An extinction event? Does it really matter at that point? Are you trying to? You're like, all right. All right. I guess I want to shoot somebody. It's just, you know, what's really going on? You know, it's like pulling back the blanket of truth and discovering that, yeah, your parents were sluts. They were perverted. Your dad was a peeping Tom, peeked into your mom's window, and she was a horny slut. Like, do you really want to know? Do you really want to know the truth? You can't handle the truth, right? I don't want to know. There's just stuff I don't want to know, right? Maybe I don't want to know why the streets are wet in Back to the Future. Maybe I don't want to know that Chuck Berry really got his inspiration from Marty McFly. I don't want to know that. I don't need to know that. But nevertheless, that's what's up. The weather's been kind. Things are going well. My lady's killing it. Just rolling right along. What do we got coming up? Got the state fair coming up. We're gonna get some fair feet. We're gonna get some fair feet. You know, that black feet, that black tar, you know, that like you see when like people are wearing just nothing but sandals around the state fair, walking through the 4-H club and the animal husbandry exhibits, and then you're walking out on the blacktop and the pavement, and it's not damp, it's just dry, it's hot, there's like hay all over the pavement. You don't even know where the hay came from, you know, one of those deals. You want to know where these feet have been? You don't want to know, man. So, but that's next on the agenda. We're staying busy. It's just been a whirlwind summer so far. We are already in it. And next thing you know, you start, it'll be August. And once we power through August, it's going to be like September. You're like, what? Fall? Is this happening? Do I feel a slight breeze? Does it smell like fall? The fuck? But that's what happens. That's what's up. You know? Shit just keeps moving on. Are you going to move with it? I don't know, man. What am I? A fake motivational speaker? All right, well, I hope you all had a good weekend. We're back to reality. There's no more 4th of July weekends. There's no more holiday weekends. Jesus, what do we got? We got to buckle down now. We got to buckle down. Make it count. Make shit happen. And suffer through. We're going into the dog days. They're probably going to trade Shohei Ohtani. Fucking Angels. God, they go into the All-Star break. I think they're under 500. Fucking. They were like 9 or 10 games over 500. Now they're fucking. Fuck. It's bullshit. Mike Trout. Injured. Fucking. Ugh. But still good. You know, I woke up this morning. My name wasn't in the obituary column. So, life's good. So, anyway, that's it. That's all I got for you today, y'all. And enjoy your week. And I'll talk at you later. Arrivederci, babies.